Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
I mean, a lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's
not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle. Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it. So, welcome to our episode all about PMDD. So, PMDD is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and we thought that it'd be really interesting to do an episode on this because it seems to have had a little bit more press recently, but I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what it actually is and what we can do to treat it. And because the condition falls under two kind of specialities, it's a mental health condition and it's also a gynecological condition, I think it makes it quite difficult for people to understand and where they should go to, who they should see, and actually what is it?
Yeah.
And there's so much about like PMDD is just really bad PMS.
Yeah.
And it's just not true that PMDD is its own condition. Yeah. So we wanted to try and kind of dispel some myths and tell people what PMDD is.
Yeah, and like really raise awareness for it, because I think even we were surprised how little we knew about PMDD when we were thinking about looking into this episode. And as you've touched on there, it's a gynae condition as well as a mental health condition, which means, unfortunately, it's like a double-edged sword with stigma. So you've got the fact that it's related to periods, which means that there's a massive stigma associated with, like, people don't talk about periods, therefore people don't realise what's normal and not normal a lot. Yeah. But then you've also got the fact that it's a mental health condition, and again, that has another massive stigma associated with it. So for people with PMDD, it's really hard because no one really knows what it is and they have to kind of figure it out for themselves sometimes and advocate for themselves. So it fits right into the kind of thing that we want to raise awareness about.
Yeah. So it's not a problem with your hormones. So it's a severe negative reaction in the brain to the natural rise of estrogen and progesterone. So on a day-to-day basis, we will have different amounts of estrogen and progesterone at different parts of the cycle. And we've discussed this before in a couple of our episodes to say that the first part of your cycle is dominated by estrogen, and then you ovulate, and then the second part of your cycle is dominated by progesterone. And that is normal. In a normal kind of cycle, estrogen, ovulate, progesterone. But when you have PMDD, when you have this rise in progesterone, you have a negative reaction to it. So it's not an abnormal rise in progesterone. This is a completely normal rise in progesterone. The process is the same, but you have a negative reaction to it.
Yeah, so your hormone levels are the same. Yep. You've not got more or less of progesterone or estrogen compared to other people. It's that you have a different kind of sensitivity to it. So your brain and your body reacts differently to the fluctuations in progesterone and estrogen, and it's mostly progesterone that is actually causing the symptoms, which we'll cover as well.
And it can start when you start your periods, and it would finish kind of when you go through menopause and you don't ovulate, because it's this kind of ovulation and the rise in the progesterone that causes the issues. When you're pregnant, if you have a pregnancy, if you choose a pregnancy, if you are able to get pregnant, then your symptoms would be dampened while you're pregnant, because you don't have these fluctuations in hormones like you do on a normal monthly basis.
And there is actually, as well as us covering it, there's not a lot out there about PMDD, but there is a really good episode on BBC Women's Hour with Dr. Paula Briggs, who is a colleague, and also she's a very, very educated woman, and she's a clinician, and she knows a lot about women's health and menopause, but she's also covered a section about PMDD in this episode, which I would urge you to all listen to, because it's really interesting, and it's not just Paula Briggs talking, it's also a patient with PMDD who talks about her experience too. And then we also
kind of gone on to.
Yeah.
We've gone on to do this because we wanted to have a patient's perspective as well. Mm-hmm. So in one of our other episodes, we're going to have Keisha, who is a sufferer of PMDD. And I think it's great because she's going to be able to tell us what PMDD is to her, mm-hmm. and kind of how it affects her life.
Her experience.
Yeah. So I think it's really good to have somebody on that actually does have PMDD,
yes.
to give us a bit more of a rounded view rather than kind of a medical education view.
Yeah. Whereas this episode is really more about what it is for people mm-hmm. who don't know or want to know a little bit more about it.
Yeah. So what can cause PMDD?
Oh, well, we don't really know the exact cause. It's not as easy as, say, like diabetes, where we could be like, oh, it's due to this. With PMDD, we don't know why some people get it, but we know that there is some sort of associations. Mm-hmm. So one thing is that they think that there's probably a genetic link to it. So something to do, because as Nick mentioned, the symptoms of PMDD come from your brain's reaction to normal levels of hormones. So there may be something genetic that makes you more sensitive to those hormones. But no one knows exactly which gene, and that doesn't really tell us exactly why some people get it and some people don't. Mm-hmm. But then there's also a link with previous traumatic or emotional negative experiences in life, and stress mm-hmm. can make you more likely to have PMDD, mm-hmm. and also smoking, because smoking, you know, is associated with everything.
Everything.
So smoking can increase your risk of having PMDD as well.
It increases your sensitivity to your hormones, to smoking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a question. Mm. If you're someone who is going to have PMDD, will you have it from when you first get your periods? Or could you sort of start periods, be all right, have something happen, and then end up having PMDD later down the line?
Yeah, you can. So you can be someone that starts from day one with symptoms of PMDD when you have the periods, but it can also develop later in life. Okay. It's not always there from the beginning.
It's not like from birth, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm. And how common is it?
Good question.
Yeah. Well, it's a good question because we don't know.
Yeah.
So there's, I think because of a lot of people don't know about PMDD, then we're not got kind of an exact figure of how many people it affects. We think about 3-8% of people have PMDD, but we actually don't know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of 40% of women will experience PMS, so premenstrual syndrome. So that is kind of just before you get your period, you can feel slightly more emotional, slightly more irritable. Mm-hmm. And you can have, you know, when people joke about different symptoms, it's kind of those symptoms, mm-hmm. which aren't a joke for a lot of people, but they're kind of put into the basket of, oh, you're due on your period.
Yeah.
That's why you feel like this.
That's why you're crying at that advert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do put things down to kind of hormones. Mm-hmm. But PMDD isn't just a severe form of PMS. It is a condition related mm-hmm. to being really super sensitive to that progesterone in the mm-hmm. second part of your cycle. So that second part of your cycle is called your luteal phase. That's when you're going to have your symptoms. So it's not just a couple of hours or a couple of days before you have your period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's 2 weeks before you have your period.
Yeah. So, a long time.
Yeah, long time.
Within a month, it's 2 weeks of your month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So which 2 weeks, in the end is like half
the year.
But it's not even just that. So you've got that 2 weeks where you're feeling, well, we'll go into the symptoms in a minute. Mm. So you've got all these symptoms related to your PMDD. Mm. And then you've got your period, which I don't think everybody feels like super great while they're having the period.
Best day of the month, yay.
Yeah. So potentially you're having cramps, you're having bleeding.
Heavy bleeding, yeah.
You're not feeling the best while you're having your period. Yeah. So if you've got that, 5 to 7 days?
Yeah. We're talking 3 weeks now.
Three weeks now, where it's not the best time for life.
Really?
So you're going to have like a nice, 7-day break?
But then I guess if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to feel minging again in a week, you're probably not feeling that great if you're waiting on it.
Yeah, exactly. And that
really
is
reduce quality of life.
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh yeah.
And that, coming back to like how common is it and why do we not know exactly how common it is, it's because that it is really hard to know how many people have it mm-hmm. when, two things, like a lot of people don't know that their symptoms are abnormal, so they might not go to get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it's quite difficult to get a diagnosis. It's not just a quick case of, oh, you've got this, let's do this blood test.
Yeah.
So 3-8% is probably an underestimation, mm-hmm. but that's all that we can really say.
Yeah.
And potentially more if we were really good at diagnosing it and people had an awareness of what's normal.
I think
and not
a lot
normal.
Of people don't actually know what PMDD is.
Yeah, I can't say like I was very clued up pre this.
No. It's not like there's lots of conditions that you will have heard of.
Mm-hmm.
It's not spoken about.
No. And even, I mean, PMS, so we haven't said actually, PMS is premenstrual syndrome.
Yeah.
So you said what it was, but that's something that I think people have heard of, but maybe still don't even really know what it is.
Yeah.
No.
And that can affect like 30 to 40% of women generally.
Mm-hmm.
But it tends to only be for a few days sort of leading up to your period. But that I think is seen as a bit of a joke. Like,
yeah.
I think, cause I remember when I was younger, my mum had a mug that said on it, like, it's just my PMS. Something like that.
Yeah.
I remember looking at it and being like, what is that? What does that mean? But then, you know, you hear, I guess PMS is a normal thing, isn't it? So, yeah. You know, you do get symptoms of PMS before your period, and that is not that you have a medical problem. It's just a normal part of the cycle and the symptoms you have with your cycle.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But I think a lot of the time it's put down, you know, if you're in a bad mood, like someone you're with might just be like, oh, I'm doing your period, are you?
Like, to be fair, I get really like moody and then I'm like, oh yeah, it's just my period. Like,
yeah.
And I think for me, it is just that.
But I think yeah. The emphasis needs to be on that PMDD is not that.
Is not that.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, like Nick said, it's not just a severe PMS. Form of that. It's a different thing entirely. It's a completely different diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what could symptoms be that are different?
So you've got a real range of symptoms, which I think, and again, is why it's so difficult to know what the diagnosis is. Mm-hmm. But you can have both physical and emotional symptoms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So physical symptoms would be so very similar symptoms to PMS. So things that if you think about the symptoms you might get before your period is due, so you might have bloating, sore breasts, tender nipples, really tired, exhausted.
Yeah.
All of those symptoms, but really importantly, they would last for longer than just a couple of days.
So it's not just before your period.
Yeah,
we're talking about the whole time that you've got that progesterone. So it's a long time.
And potentially quite severe forms of those symptoms as well.
And severe forms of the psychological symptoms
and
as
then
well.
The,
like feeling hopeless, suicidal.
Yeah, so that the psychological symptoms are often things like anxiety, low mood, depression, feeling suicidal, or even, you know, self-harm and trying to kill yourself is definitely part
feeling
of it.
Overwhelmed which is, with life, you can't cope. And it's just
irritable.
To go from somebody who is functioning and especially kind of if you have a job that you kind of, I don't know, lead in a team or that kind of thing, you've gone from like, I'm doing this, I'm being
successful.
Able to do my job, I'm successful, I've got this, to oh my gosh, I can't cope,
I can't do
and
anything.
I feel suicidal, and I want to break up with my partner, and I'm
depressed. The
biggest thing describing is actually just not feeling yourself at all in those 2 weeks, which is a long time to not feel yourself.
Mm-hmm. And you can also have like memory problems, people describe like brain fog, and you know, just not being able to process their day-to-day things that they normally cope
well,
with, sleeping all the time.
Well, sleeping all the time, but also insomnia.
And
another symptom, which that can be really hard if you're actually struggling with actual chronic fatigue and you can't
get
feel,
any sleep.
You feel like you really all you need to do is sleep and then you get to bed and you can't sleep.
And those symptoms tend to be like what's really specific for PMDD is that those symptoms are for up to 2 weeks, you know, around 2 weeks after ovulation, before your period, and you feel better in the first couple of days of your period.
Okay.
So you start your period and then within a few days you'll feel much better, like a mood kind of lift.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like really, really key, because obviously those symptoms can be other things as well. That could be that you have depression or you have mental health disorder.
Yeah.
But the real key thing with PMDD is that those things are cyclical and it lasts for the up to 2 weeks before your period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's another condition that potentially is cyclical, but it's slightly different. So PME, premenstrual exacerbation, is a condition whereby you have a background of depression, anxiety, a mental health condition that gets worse in that 2 weeks of your period, 2 weeks before your period, so in the luteal phase.
I can see how this gets confusing.
Yeah. But actually, your background level, so the 2 weeks that we're seeing potentially is your better point,
you still
have a mental health condition.
Yeah.
So you have a background mental health condition that is exacerbated by the hormones.
Yeah, got it.
Rather than kind of just when you've
just
got that.
At that 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is really key when we come on to how you treat PMDD, because actually you need to consider that with someone who might have a pre-existing mental health condition that is exacerbated by their hormonal changes versus someone who has core, I think it's called core PMDD, isn't it? So they don't necessarily have an underlying mental health condition. They just have PMDD as that mental health condition. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so to diagnose PMDD, obviously you can't do a scan or a blood test that's just going to say, right, tick, you've got PMDD.
No. Mm-hmm.
How do you go about this?
So it's really difficult. Because, again, going back to the people not knowing about PMDD and the lack of information that's out there. And I also think that when you go to see your GP, there'll be a lot of people that have got depression and anxiety. And for them to kind of, in that 8-minute appointment or whatever you get, link it with your periods and link it with, if it's somebody who's not heard about the condition, I think it'd be really difficult.
It's a hard relationship to put together if half the time you're feeling like this, or even over half the time you're feeling like this, it's hard to think, oh, actually, it's that.
Yeah.
And if you didn't track your periods,
because it might be easily, it might be easily put down to job stress or kind of lifestyle or sleeping of your child or something to do with exercise. You know, you could put it down to lots of different things. You
wouldn't, and if it's sleeping as well, if you think, oh, it's because I'm not sleeping in those 2 weeks, but not sleeping in those 2 weeks, that insomnia could be a symptom of the PMDD. It's all very interconnected.
And also, like, logistically, when do you get an appointment? So, like, what if you make an appointment when you're feeling a bit better and you're like, oh no, that wasn't normal last week, I need to go and speak to the GP. And then by the time you get the appointment, you're back in that 2-week cycle and you don't want to go out, you're feeling anxious. It must be logistically quite difficult to do something about it as well.
So what you would need to do is track your symptoms. So have a diary whereby you track your symptoms on a daily basis for at least a couple of months. And then you're tracking kind of your menstrual cycle, but you're also tracking how do you feel and any kind of physical symptoms as well. Because then you could see, probably really quite straightforward, you could see if there is any correlation. Because it might be that actually there is no correlation and it was job stress or life stress or that you're actually going through a really bad breakup and you're depressed. There could be lots of different things going on, but by tracking this succinctly and saying, this is my menstrual cycle, this is kind of physical symptoms, this is mental health symptoms, you could kind of link them a little bit better.
And I think also really important to, when you're trying to do that, if you think it might be related to your cycle, really note down if your symptoms completely disappear or are just slightly better after your period, because that might help you distinguish between core PMDD and then premenstrual exacerbation, PME. PME. But diagnosis-wise, I think it's really key to say, and we wanted to get this across, that because the reason there is no blood test or scan or anything like that is because essentially the hormones that your body's producing are at normal levels. So it's not as if you have a lower progesterone or a higher progesterone. They're normal, so if you did hormonal blood tests, they would just look normal. But it's your response to them.
I suppose it's like a lot of things, if you put into your body, your bodies have different responses to. Like, say if someone drinks the same amount of alcohol as someone else and one person gets more drunk than the other. Like, people's bodies do react differently to different things.
We're not all clones of each other. There's there's differences there.
But I think with the more knowledge that is present now, I think tracking your cycle and tracking symptoms is quite a straightforward thing for you to take with you to a healthcare professional and say, look, this is what's happening. What do you think about it?
And that's where you would get the diagnosis. So it's based on your symptoms. So there are like questionnaires and things like that that medical professionals will use. I think often your first port of call would be your GP. Your GP might then refer you on to a gynecologist because it is a gynecological condition.
To treat the condition, it's going to be, if you're manipulating hormones in a sense, it's going to be through a gynecologist.
But you may also get referred to a psychiatrist potentially as well, and that they could also diagnose the condition too.
And sometimes it might be that you'll see a psychiatrist because you've been referred there with mental health problems, and when they've looked into things properly, they're like, actually, this is PMDD. Let's think about manipulating your hormones.
I think a multidisciplinary care is sort of needed in this sort of condition.
And interestingly, when we were looking at various different things and speaking to Keisha before to kind of plan things, we were talking about that PMDD affects people with autism and ADHD much more prevalently than people that are not neurodivergent. And that's because they think that they're more prone to kind of these hormonal changes, like they don't like the changes in a sense. So then they would have a heightened sensory response, so they would have PMDD. Which is interesting, because I feel like that would be more difficult to diagnose, because I think it's that kind of where they're already labelled it's to do one, with their ADHD. It's already labelled that it's to do with whatever else they have got going on. But it could be that actually they would be much better if we'd regulated their cycles.
Yeah, it must be really difficult then. I mean, obviously, the ideal situation is you've got someone with the core symptoms of PMDD that can keep a cycle diary and then go to their GP. But I think even in that situation, it's really hard if people don't get a diagnosis for a really long time. Yeah. So then if you throw in other mental health conditions, I think it's and hard then as well, neurodiversity
even
as well.
Just keeping a cycle diary, if people are getting into them 2 weeks where they're feeling like they just don't want to do anything, if they're feeling hopeless, they might think, well, there's no point me doing
this. Yeah, absolutely.
And it might be hard to like try and stick to doing a diary when you're feeling mad.
I think that's a really key point as well. Like we have mentioned the symptoms, but like if you think about those symptoms, they are really severe symptoms that can you wouldn't maybe be able to go to work. You wouldn't want to see your friends. Like if you are suicidal for 2 weeks of the month, you might not even want to eat or drink. You know, you won't be able to look after yourself in any way. So then to have to to try and be motivated to write down how you feel, probably not going to happen. Yeah. You know,
easier
it's going to be really
done.
Hard to try and actually get a diagnosis.
But that's how you would go about it. So first port of call would be GP. Think about tracking symptoms and then going from there, because, as we've said, there isn't going to be a test that would give us a diagnosis. Yeah.
And once you've got a diagnosis, where would someone go with that? Would they get treatment? Sort of treatments could be used?
Treatments really is that we want to stop those fluctuations in hormones, so you don't want an estrogen dominant and a progesterone dominant with an ovulation in the middle. You just don't want to have an ovulation basically, and you want to be on an even keel all the time. And there's a few ways that you can do that. One of them is to go on the pill, which we said before in one of our other episodes about contraception. How it works is to stop you ovulating. So you can go on the pill and you can take it continuously, or you can go on the pill and take like a short few day break rather than a 7 day break, so that you're not having like these fluctuations in hormones. So it's better to be kind of background level of kind of on treatment all the time. But as we said before, the pill is not appropriate for everybody. You increase your risk of blood clots if you're overweight, if you're older, if you're a smoker. The pill is not going to be appropriate for you. So it is about that kind of a risk benefit, and it's a proper discussion with a healthcare professional.
So that when we say the pill, it's we're talking about the combined or contraceptive pill. So that's the pill that has both estrogen and progesterone. So if you have a progesterone only pill, that's less likely to suppress ovulation, but also doesn't have those side effects, doesn't have those risks associated with it, like increased risk of stroke because it doesn't have the estrogen component. If you want more information on that, listen to we have an episode all about different types of contraception, which will go into detail about those different things.
Obviously not everybody is suited for the combined pill. Can people get the coil? Can people get any other sorts of hormones?
So the coil won't help. So the coil suppresses ovulation in a small subset of people, and usually it only suppresses it for a little bit, and then your ovulation comes back. So, but that actually, I've just said the coil then, like there's just one coil.
So that's the Mirena.
That's the Mirena coil. So that's the progesterone-releasing coil. Would not be suitable for somebody with PMDD. It's not going to help your symptoms. But it can be used as part of your PMDD treatment. Just to quickly digress about other coils will not help at all. So a copper coil, for example, is for contraception, but it would not regulate your hormones, so therefore would be no use at all in PMDD. So that's just kind of a side thing. Yes, the Mirena coil can be used as part of PMDD treatment as the progesterone arm, because what else you can use to suppress ovulation is continuous estrogen. So just as people use as part of HRT, so in a gel or a spray or a tablet, you can take estrogen to suppress ovulation and to keep everything very, very regular, so that you've not got these ups and downs of different hormones. But you can't just take estrogen, which is the treatment for PMDD, because this would be detrimental to the lining of your womb, so the endometrium, the lining of your womb. If you're just giving estrogen all the time, will get thicker and thicker and thicker, and potentially could become abnormal. So hyperplasia, typical hyperplasia, endometrial cancer. So you need something to protect the lining of your womb in a form of a progesterone, and the Mirena could do that for you.
The other things that you can try are, so we can give you medication to suppress your whole hormonal axis. So we've talked before about how like your hormones essentially are guided by a little gland in your brain that then tells your ovaries to produce certain hormones. Mm-hmm. And we can give you medication that's an injection that kind of dampens down that whole response.
To stop you ovulating.
Yeah, and it's known more like as the, you know, chemical menopause, temporary menopause, because giving you that injection reduces your estrogen and progesterone levels to a menopausal kind of level, but it's not permanent, it's temporary. Mm-hmm. So if you have this treatment, you might do it as a trial to see if it actually improves your symptoms. But the problem with this treatment is you can't be on it forever, because if you are in a temporary menopause before the age of menopause for a long time, there are risks. So you can get like weakening of your bones and that kind of thing. So it's something that people often try for sort of 6 months. You can have it for a little bit longer, but no one really has it for longer than 2 years. Mm-hmm. But it can be useful to kind of see if your symptoms actually are improving if you do not have the fluctuation of your progesterone.
If your symptoms don't improve, then it's unlikely that it is this.
Yeah.
If you shut off your hormonal axis and you're not having these estrogen and progesterone peaks, so you are therefore menopausal, and we said it would finish when you are menopausal because you haven't got these changing hormone levels, and you're telling me that you're no better on this treatment, then it's not going to be PMDD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it might be that mixture of, you know, the premenstrual exacerbation. So you might have something else that is just exacerbated when you have your cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then if you take away that cycle, you might actually still have quite severe symptoms.
Yeah.
So it's a good kind of temporary thing to try and see.
Yeah.
Does this help?
Go on.
I was just going to say, when you mentioned that you can have the Myrina coil for progesterone and then use the supplement of estrogen in like creams or tablets or anything, could you do the pop
progesterone only pill?
Could you have the progesterone only pill and the estrogen supplements, or is that not?
Yeah, you could do so. That's like basically that'd be the combined pill. So like the COC,
so you
the
kind
combined
of might
oral contraceptive.
Well,
but there are lots of different types of that pill. There's like loads of them with lots of different hormone levels and different types of hormones in. So you might want to sort of do a bit of trial and error to see which helps you.
And there's certain combined pills that are for PMDD because they contain a certain hormone that helps PMDD symptoms, basically. Mm-hmm. So when you've seen somebody who treats people with PMDD, they would be like, right, let's pop you on Yasmin. It's got the hormone in that would help your symptoms.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are certain pills that have been proven to help. So you would stick with those and go through kind of a number one, number two, number three.
Yeah.
So we would start on the combined pill that contains drosperidone and try that first. If that doesn't work, then potentially we could move on to estrogen gel with something protecting the lining of your womb. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, should we move on to a GnRH analogue and close off the loop and put you in a menopause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a stepwise approach, just like it is for lots of different treatments. But this is really frustrating for lots of people, and I can see it, because if you've been sat at home feeling absolutely horrendous for 2 weeks of every month, for years,
forever,
potentially,
or
a very long time, and nobody's been listening to you, you've tried multiple antidepressive medications or anti-anxiety medications, and you're no better, or you don't feel yourself, then to get to a specialist and then they say, right, we're going to give this a try, but you need to be on it for at least 3 months. And then if that doesn't work, we'll give this a try and you need to be on it for at least 3 months. And if that doesn't work, you can try this. And you might feel great on it, but you can't be on it forever because that's not how this works.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that it actually would be a really difficult situation for most people going through this diagnosis.
And then for people as well that would like to get pregnant, having to come off whatever medication they're on if it's hormonal to get pregnant, because getting pregnant is not a straight away thing. It can take some time, so that'll be an adjustment itself. And also, once you've had your baby and then getting back into having periods and stuff, also an adjustment.
Yeah, so I think like that's because one of the main ways of treating PMDD is suppressing ovulation, and that is hormonal treatments. So it's probably a really good time for us to come into there are other medical treatments as well, which can help with those times where you might need to stop or you're not suitable for hormones.
Yeah, and there are first line treatments. And so there are first line treatments. For a lot of people, they work really well.
Yeah. So obviously, one of the big symptoms is affecting your mood with anxiety and depression. So we can give antidepressants or anti-anxiety medication for those symptoms of PMDD. Fluoxetine is one of them. Citalopram. There's many different types. You can have them every day, so you can have them constantly every day, or you can actually just have them during the 2 weeks or however many days of your cycle that your symptoms are really, really bad. Yep. So they're not hormonal, and they actually can be given alongside hormones as well. It's not one or the other. You can have an antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication as well as hormone treatments, or you can just have one or the other and see what works.
And obviously, going back a bit to where we mentioned that there's physical and psychological symptoms, if someone here was listening now thinking, God, I've got these symptoms and I think this is what I've got, what do I do about it? Should they speak to their GP first and then they'll be directed? Or because obviously there's gynae and there's...
Yeah, so go to your GP first and then your GP will potentially... They may be well versed in it. They may have a good understanding. They may be able to start some treatments, but they may refer you on to a gynecologist or a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, physical symptoms as well. There are also medical treatments for the physical symptoms. So if you struggle with breast tenderness and bloating and that kind of thing, and there's like pain associated with your symptoms, then having something like an anti-inflammatory medication, like ibuprofen, naproxen, those kind of things, that can help. You know, just symptom relief really to make your life a little bit easier during the time that you're having your symptoms.
I think one of the things we talk about quite a lot is like vitamins and supplements. Is that something people with PMDD might be able to look into if they don't want to take the hormones and, you know, could take it in combination?
I think it's something that they could look into, but it's not going to be a cure.
Yeah.
I think PMDD, when you speak to people that have the condition and you see people with the condition, it's not kind of, if you take this vitamin, you're going to feel much better.
Yeah.
It's really severe. And we're talking about 2 weeks of the month where you feel kind of completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Sometimes suicidal, depressed. You don't want to be with your partner anymore. There's so many things that go on that actually saying, okay, well, if we take some magnesium, I'm sure you're going to feel better.
It would be great if that was the case.
Wouldn't it? Drop in the ocean.
Yeah. But it's something you might take alongside.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not like, you know, when we're thinking about the guidelines to manage PMDD, it's not number one, vitamins and supplements, but it's in there because some people say that it helps. So things like vitamin B6 can be quite helpful. Chasteberry, which I'm not very familiar with, but is listed as something that can be helpful in like a kind of helping you stabilize your mood a bit, so it can help with the irritability kind of symptoms as well. So yeah, they're there, they might help, but they're not going to treat all of your symptoms.
I think it's just if people think I want to try that and they try and it works for them,
then that's great.
And there's always kind of your diet and your lifestyle, because you being the best version of yourself will kind of help any symptoms and any conditions, because you will feel a little bit better by being more confident in your own skin, I suppose, in a sense. But that's easier said than done with lots of things, because if you're feeling completely overwhelmed, then you're not going to be like, oh, I feel completely overwhelmed, but I'm not going to have a coffee today. And
better eat clean,
I'm going to go for a run.
I think sometimes curling's off.
So they're really all the, like, tablets, medical treatments that you can have to try and help your symptoms. It's also really important that we think about like talking therapies, CBT, counselling. They can be really helpful for people with PMDD, and also the people that may have premenstrual exacerbation of other mental health conditions. So that's, I think I always like things to be like linear, like do this, 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 and this, and this. But with PMDD treatment, you've got a real like mixture of things that might help.
Mixed bag of things.
So you might start off with CBT or some like counselling because you've gone to your GP with low mood. But then actually along the journey, you figure out that it might be related to your hormones. So then you might try some hormone treatments as well. There's a lot of different things that you can try. There's no set. This is what you should do stepwise.
And you can try a mix of them all at once, can't you?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
And CBT can give coping mechanisms. So it can give you kind of some mindfulness and some ability to be able to kind of think laterally if you're having a terrible time, and if you're being kind of maybe in inverted commas irrational about something, you can have a bit more of a mindset of actually how can I cope in that situation to make it better. Like, what are my thinking steps, what is my thinking approach to be able to understand this situation and be able to get out of it. Because if you're thinking you're at work full time, or if you're trying to deal with various different things, coping strategies is a good kind of method.
And I think as well, having even the thought of you've got support there, you've got someone who you can speak to about how you're feeling and your symptoms, and you're not completely alone in it.
Yeah, and I think we obviously have to also talk about surgery, because people who have PMDD might think, right, well, if this is all due to my hormones, I don't want children, can we just get rid of my ovaries, and is that going to solve it? And in a way, it might do. So we need to be certain that you actually have core PMDD before the conversation would begin about maybe doing something as severe and as as permanent as surgery
like
that.
It's quite a big decision.
But you've also got the other factor that these were premenopausal women, and if you remove someone who's, if you remove your ovaries, uterus, if you're premenopausal, you're going to be postmenopausal, and being postmenopausal from an early age has risks with your cardiovascular health. So basically, you're more likely to have a heart attack, you might be more likely to have stroke, dementia at an earlier age.
Risks the bone health as well.
And bone health, so really, if you want to remove someone's ovaries and uterus for a treatment for PMDD, you actually need to be on some sort of estrogen to reduce those long-term risks. So it might help. So, you know, if you've had symptoms of PMDD, you've tried GnRH injections, which are the injection that like dampened down all of your hormones, and your symptoms got better, you might want to think about having your ovaries removed. But if you do have your ovaries removed, you would then need some estrogen to help prevent you having any long-term problems. And as Nick mentioned, if you have a uterus, then having estrogen is a little bit dangerous, because it can cause abnormalities in the lining of your womb, and that can lead to changes that can be precancerous and then can become cancerous. So you might need to actually have like the Mirena coil in to keep that lining of the womb thin, or maybe you need to consider having a hysterectomy as well as an oophorectomy. And these are massive decisions. So oophorectomy is removal of your ovaries, and then hysterectomy is removal of your uterus and womb. So yeah, this is a huge non-reversible permanent surgery. So it's not something that is, you know, should be taken lightly, but it might be something that would help a certain number of women. So it's something that you would really need to have a good think about, whether that's suitable for you, and also have that conversation with your gynecologist about what risks and benefits there would be to you.
I think it's difficult, because if you have got PMDD, this will help. But it doesn't just come with, this will help, you'll be cured, this is the end. It comes with, this will help, you'll be cured, this is the end. But actually, it's not, because
and these risks, and also it might not help if you've already
Some people are completely inappropriate to have the operation. If you're carrying a lot of extra weight, if you've had lots of surgeries before, if you've got other conditions that make you not suitable to have an anaesthetic, there are lots of situations whereby, although we know this operation really might help you, you're just not a suitable candidate to have the operation, which again is a really difficult situation.
And also, obviously, if you have a hysterectomy, you can't have a child.
So if you're someone that wants to get pregnant, then that's just not an option. Well, it might be, you know, you might be someone that in an ideal world would want to have children, but because you have PMDD, you can't have a relationship, you haven't found someone to have children with, so it might be like, actually, you're not going to have a pregnancy, and maybe you consider this, you know,
definitely
not
very,
as first line, but later on.
A very big decision to make. And I think it'd be something good to speak to people about as well before the decision's made.
Well, there'd be no gynecologist that would want to jump in and do a hysterectomy for no good reason, so you would have to have a lot of conversations. But you might. There are definitely a certain number of people that this would be beneficial and they would be suitable, but there's also other things to consider as well, like, is it safe, is it the right thing, and are we putting you more at risk of other problems later in life as
Definitely. So if somebody thinks that they have PMDD, what should they do? I think we have been through a couple of times that they should, first of all, make a symptom diary, ensure that it's really quite comprehensive, because you go in and saying, for 2 weeks a month I feel awful, for 2 weeks a month I feel great. You need to make sure that we can understand that. Like, what do you mean you feel great? What do you mean you don't feel great? Like, having like a proper symptom diary makes things much easier.
And even like writing your thoughts down. So that can be really helpful for the time that you think you feel really, you know, down or depressed. Then it might be hard to articulate what that means, but you might have these negative thoughts. Write those down in your diary as well, and like the dates that you're having them, because that can help.
And then we can work out a bit what's going on. And then from the GP, some GPs I'm sure would find it very straightforward to start you on treatment, a trial of something. And if not, they could refer you to somebody that they think would be appropriate to try trials of treatment.
Yeah.
There are some support mechanisms, and Mind has a good bit about PMDD, so we'll pop a link to that as well.
Yeah, I think we've got a few different links for resources we'll put at the end of the episode. At the end of the episode, we'll put it on Spotify and other platforms. Yeah, so you can access it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you get any questions that you'd like us to answer?
Yeah. There's quite a few questions, quite a few myths. So the first question from the socials was, somebody was asking, is it a thing, is it normal that they feel like their senses are sort of heightened with their PMDD? There were sort of ideas that they could, I don't know if it's quite right, but like hear more efficiently and things like that with their senses.
Well, I imagine so. I think it's related to your response to hormones, isn't it? So people will have different responses to the same hormones. Yeah. So I imagine it could be. It's not something that I would say is like a core symptom of PMDD, but probably if people are experiencing it.
I think everyone has different symptoms and different ways they react to stuff. But I've seen a video online, it was a woman just speaking about her experience, and she discussed how she had like sensory increase,
changes,
but not in a good way. It was like noise sensitivity, she didn't like being in loud environments, and light sensitivity. And I think different people's bodies react in different ways to certain stuff.
Definitely.
Something else we've got is insomnia a normal symptom?
Yeah, I think we went into this before. There's a list of symptoms that is genuinely as long as your arm, and that's why I think it's difficult to sometimes make a very straightforward diagnosis for these things. And insomnia can be a symptom, whether it's normal or not, but it's a symptom of the condition.
And we should say as well, insomnia is where you're really struggling to sleep.
And a question we got, which I think we've covered really nicely, is will contraceptives help? Well, they help with PMDD, I think we've said.
And well,
it's a treatment, it can do.
A proportion of people, contraceptives will help. They haven't been shown to be as effective as using kind of estrogen all the time, like a HRT, but some combined oral contraceptives can help.
Yeah.
A question which I think is really important is someone has asked, what can I do to support people and my loved ones who have PMDD?
Yeah, that's a great one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think, well, the resources that we'll post will be useful for that, because I know for a fact that I think Mind has something specific to that about what you can do as a relative of someone with PMDD. I think the first thing is, even if you're asking that question, you're already doing the right thing, because you're considering that person is going through something difficult and what you might be able to do to make life easier. I think ask them as well. So, you know, during a couple of weeks of the month, they're probably going to be feeling like rubbish. So they might ask you to avoid certain things, or
they don't want to go to a certain thing. They don't want to go to a special event. They don't want to make
decisions.
And just be sensitive to them at that time, so they're not going to be themselves, and try not to
maybe
don't
take say, "Oh, that's your PMDD talking."
Yeah, probably not.
Understanding more about the condition as well.
Always, educating yourself is always a good thing.
A
similar one that sort of falls under that umbrella was people asking, we know that some people get PMDD from when they first get their period. Is there things parents can look out for or do to support their child that they think is having this?
I think there's loads of things that parents can do to look out for lots of different menstrual conditions. So I don't want to just say PMDD. We are going to do an episode on kind of how parents can try and help their children. But I think it's just really important to be open and honest with your children from the beginning, whether that's a girl or a boy, so that they understand about menstrual health and what happens at different times of the month, and how they can kind of pick up, because that's why we see kind of young girls that have got periods that are so heavy that their hemoglobin's in their boots, so their blood count is in their boots, because they've not told anyone, nobody's told them that this is abnormal, nobody's listened to them. So it's kind of picking up the cues that this isn't just a teenage rage issue, and it's actually very related to their periods and cycles.
And I guess also what you could do is, if you as a parent think that your daughter might be having some quite severe PMS symptoms, if she doesn't want to keep a diary, you could try and keep track of what you're observing. Because that might help. But obviously, I think having open communication and explaining that it's okay to feel differently during different times of the cycle, and if there's anything that they're really struggling with, then they can talk to you about it, is really important. Yeah.
Okay, and a last question is, if I have a hysterectomy, will it be cured?
No, and that's a really simple question, and it's a really good point to get across. A hysterectomy is removing your womb. Mm-hmm. So it's the estrogen and progesterone and the cycling that causes the problems. Mm-hmm. So removing the ovaries is what you need to do, not removing the womb. Mm-hmm. People have the womb removed, so they don't need to take progesterone with the estrogen that they will need to take when they're premenopausal.
They don't need that preventive.
Yeah, so if you removing the ovaries may be a good treatment for you if you've got PMDD. Removing a woman's ovaries before the age of 50 means that she's more likely to have heart disease, stroke, thin bones, frailty later on. So we want to give estrogen.
Yeah.
You can't give estrogen to someone who has a womb without giving progesterone because of what Nick, I love how you say this, but it's like, because the endometrium will become abnormal, you might get hyperplasia, which can lead to cancer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's why you may have a hysterectomy, a removal of your womb as part of the treatment.
Mm-hmm. But just removing that womb is not treatment at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Removing the womb will stop you having periods.
Ovaries are key.
You've still got your ovaries.
Okay. The ovaries are what's caused the cycling of the hormones. Yeah. Your womb has got nothing to do with that. Okay. So when people say they want a hysterectomy, most of the time they actually mean that they want an oophorectomy. They want their ovaries removing. Mm. So they are different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah. Got you.
Got it.
So I think that's all the questions now. We've covered everything there.
Great. Okay, lovely. Okay, so as always, just a quick disclaimer to say that everything we've discussed are our own opinions and shouldn't be taken as medical advice and are not associated with where we work.
Yeah, so if you found this episode interesting, comforting, you know, if you took anything away from it, please do like it on wherever you're listening to our podcast. Remember to subscribe. And if you've got a minute, leave us a review. Tell us what you thought.
So it might feel like a small thing, but it really does help make a big difference if you give a 5-star review, because it helps push the podcast out to more people so we can keep breaking down barriers, busting myths, and making sure that everyone has access to this kind of information.
Yeah, and we want these episodes to reach as many people as possible. So if you're up for being a part of that ripple effect, then please hit those buttons and help us spread the word.
And make sure that you're following us and engaging with our content on our socials at Between Two Ovaries.
Thank you.